Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
But after, you know, many of the surface layers came off, it was only actually when I can't remember if I'd actually finished the steps at the time. I don't think I had actually. I think I was still working them at the time. But I realised that, you know, a lot of my pain and my shame around my blackness was actually linked to a lot of my behaviour. A lot of my pain and my avoidance around relationships and stuff like that, you know, it was actually rooted in racism. And that was very, very hard. Very, very hard. I finally began to admit to myself that I did find it really, really hard to build friendships, especially with other black people in fellowship. I found myself kind of bolting from other black people that wanted to be friends with me. And, you know, when they got to a certain level of emotional intimacy, when they really wanted to be friends, you know, I found it really painful. I was so triggered. And because of, you know, a lot of the painful experiences that I'd had with other black people in my past, betrayal, abuse, and, you know, that kind of mixed in with my own racist thinking meant that, you know, I just couldn't be around anyone that looked like me. And that was really, really painful. And initially, I found it was really isolating. It was very, very painful. I actually lost, you know, a few white friendships in fellowship when I was going through this stage of my recovery, because I realised that I really, really wanted to talk to people about it. And, you know, what was happening is that, you know, I got to a stage where when I wanted to share about my black experience, that my white friends seemed to disappear. I had a couple of really, really, really painful experiences where I'd been sharing quite consistently with people on a weekly basis. You know, one in particular was for, you know, over a couple of years. And, this was kind of like weekly without fail. And I remember sharing with another black person that I need to talk to this person about how I'm feeling, because I felt that, you know, my needs weren't getting met in the phone calls, and that I was hiding and that I wasn't being myself. And, you know, if I wasn't allowed to talk about my black experience, then, you know, it's not really a friendship. And I knew that I was just being codependent. So I remember, you know, deciding to speak to this person. I remember sending her, I didn't do it face to face, but I remember sending her a message, you know, saying that, you know, this is where I am, and like, I really would like us to talk about that part of our friendship. And she vanished. She stopped contacting me, and that was one of the most excruciating experiences that I had in recovery, and actually taught me a lot. It taught me a lot about how powerful racism is, and that she just wasn't available, you know, in the friendship for that, she just wasn't available for it. And, of course, you know, she could have stopped contacting me for other reasons, but even so, it was, you know, I couldn't think of any other reason why she stopped contacting me. And, that was just incredibly painful. But I understand now that, you know, talking to other white people about my black pain in that respect was very triggering for them. You know, it would be the equivalent of me sitting in an AA meeting with a can of special brew. You know, you just wouldn't do it. And, you know, I learned that, you know, I wanted white people to rescue me from my black pain because I didn't, it was too painful for me to kind of, to face it on my own or to face it with other black people. I was so triggered by other black people at that time that I wanted white people to rescue me. But I realised after what happened with kind of losing the friendships that it just wasn't appropriate, and that I needed to really take responsibility for that part of my recovery, and that they just were not going to be available for me to process that. Yeah, I mean, despite the pain that I was in, I didn't give up. I couldn't give up. I wanted to change and I wanted to be racially sober, and I didn't even really understand what that meant or what that looked like, but I just knew that I had to keep going.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, January 15th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our monthly Global Sunday Talk on Racism. If any of our listeners, folks that are on the line or listening, if you have a better title for the program, feel free. I was trying to think of that, but I couldn't really think of anything better that gets to the point of what this broadcast is all about. I think retired firefighter, he was with us yesterday evening, and he emphasized that it is critically important that we understand that racism, white supremacy, is not something that is just a problem in South Africa from time to time, or a problem in Mississippi or some places in the southern U.S. The entire planet is dominated by a system of white supremacy, where the white race, they look to maintain, terrorize, dominate, and abuse everybody they say is not white, especially the people they classify as black. So this program, I think, is very important to be able to converse with non-white people in different parts of the globe just to compare, contrast their experiences, their views on racism, white supremacy. I think we'll see a lot of the patterns in terms of what whites do to practice racism. And we maybe can even come up with some strategies, things, suggestions, counter-racist tactics to help solve this problem as soon as possible. Before we get to some of our guests, number one, Mr. Fox, I did send a contact to France Fanon, a different victim of racism in the UK area. I sent a Skype message to him and I sent an email to him. I added him I tried to ring his line and it didn't go through. And I attempted to add him as a contact. I sent him a contact message. If he messages me, if he lets me know if he got the message or what have you, then I can attempt to add him again. If he adds me as a contact, that might help things proceed. But just if you can message him or email him or what have you, just let him know. Oh, got him. I will add him in seconds. He must have heard me calling his name. So we'll take care of that. And the audio clip that you heard at the beginning of the program, making sure I get back in good graces, one of our participants in the UK. We had a listener, actually, who wanted her to be present because she had information to share. She was with us before, but she's doing phenomenal work. She's doing a project focused on the late, great general and child psychiatrist, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. She wanted me to share a few of my views on Dr. Welsing's work, and I botched it. I was still suffering tremendously from 2016 and just missed the date when she wanted to do it. So making sure we get back in her good graces. Number one, I'm all down for doing anything constructive with Dr. Welsing. So we will be doing that project later this year. I think she'd already said that as a go. We'll just be doing it a little later. And she has a brand new podcast where she talks about exactly what you heard at the beginning, racism, white supremacy, and just the struggles we all go through in terms of our mental health, being abused, being terrorized, and then not even really having adequate resources and outlets where we can talk about those problems. You can listen to all of her work at theblacksteps.com. TheBlackSteps.com, but that was June Allen. She's been with us quite a few times, I think at least two or three times on the Global Sunday Talk program. That was a clip from her new podcast. I think she's only done five episodes, TheBlackSteps.com. You can go there, download, subscribe, and follow. So we have, of course, June Allen. We have Mr. Fox. We have Mary. We have African 1884, and I'm adding Andrew and France Fanon. While I add those two, I will start with Miss June Allen. Any comments on the clip or anything else you would like to open up with as we get started?
Yeah, hi, Gus. Thanks, everyone. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I had no idea you were going to play it today. But I basically just wanted to start doing the project because I realized that, you know, there was no place to actually process our racial pain. You know, I think that obviously it's important to learn about our history and it's important to learn about, you know, et cetera. But what I realized was that, you know, what do we do with that information once we accept it? What do we do with that information once we really understand, you know, the enormity of how racism impacts us and how it impacts our mental health? And being in recovery myself since 2009, I realized that as a structure that it actually worked for me to help me process my pain. Now, obviously, you know, it is very, you know, in the UK, I don't know how it is, you know, across the rest of the globe, but in the UK, it is very white middle class. But I was able to build a network of other Black people that are also working the steps in 12-step recovery. And it's not just about, you know, 12-step recovery is not just about addiction. It's about addiction to substances. It's about behaviours as well. And it's about the maladaptive behaviours that we use to manage our pain. And that's what I realised about my recovery. So that's kind of like, in a nutshell, why I actually set the project up. So, yeah, it's been amazing. And, you know, I'm still a student to all of this. I'm still learning. But it was just important for me to get it out there because I know that when I, as I spoke about this stuff with my fellows, you know, with other Black people, it's become an amazing, you know, grassroots movement. And I just wanted to share it with others because, you know, I know there's a lot of other people out there that are in pain about this stuff and that don't know where to start in terms of their Black mental health. But I thought that this was an amazing place to start, to be able to start understanding and build the emotional intelligence and to just reconnect with ourselves. So, yeah, no, it's good to be able to share that stuff. And it's another place that I found that's actually been able to give me hope about, you know, how to produce justice and to destroy white supremacy and to teach it to my daughter. So it's been a really great experience. So as I said, if anybody's got any questions or wants to find out more about it, then they can actually reach me at the website at theblacksteps.com. So yeah, thanks, Gus, for sharing that.
Indeed, theblacksteps.com, theblacksteps.com. June Allen, outstanding counter-racist effort. Going down the line, I can add now. As I add our other two participants, Mary, did you have commentary you wanted to share? Good to hear from you as well.
Hi, good to hear from you as well, Gus. I don't really have any commentary, so I'm just going to hear what everyone else is talking about and see what we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely. We have, or at least I have, quite a few things on the schedule, and then I'm sure you all have your own commentary as well. I'm just getting folks opening comments, any opening thoughts that you want to share, and then certainly we'll get to Trump's pending administration, the end of the Obama era. There was a prison riot in Birmingham at the end of December that Lorraine, she's been with us quite a few times, that she had commentary on. And I'm sure you all have other things you would like to address as well. Let's see. I think we just got both of our new participants. One of our first time callers joining us from outside the U.S. I was told France Fanon. Is that the label that you're going by, sir?
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Loud and clear. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's Frank Fanon.
Frank Fanon, my apologies.
Yeah, thank you. Yep.
Right, anything that folks should know about who you are or any thoughts you want to get out as we get started?
Except for the fact that I'm a Black man who lives in the UK and I am originally from Nigeria. That's it. That's everything about me, I guess.
Okay. If you could maybe just turn your volume down maybe one notch, just to make sure we don't have any distortion. We can hear you. It's just it sounded like it might have been up just one notch, a little loud. But other than that, grand to have you with us, and we'll be looking forward to getting your commentary for the broadcast today. Let's see. So we got Mary. So many people. We are growing our international audience, which is phenomenal. I'm super happy about that. So we already got Mary, got June, Frank, Fanon. Let's see. Andrew, are you with us, sir? Not hearing you.
Yes. Yes. How you doing, Gus? You okay?
Right, poorly, but always good to hear from you, sir.
Yeah, good to hear you as well. And yeah, thanks for letting me participate.
Absolutely. Thank you all for taking the time out to speak with us. Always good to hear from you regularly now that we're doing the program. Mr. Fox, you with us, sir?
Yes, greetings to everyone. Yeah, the comments on the audio section, the white friends that that stood out, and the white friend acted how white people normally do when their victims start to get awareness or consciousness about the system of racism, white supremacy. That white person was nowhere to be seen. So that's one of the things what stood out for me from hearing that audio segment.
Absolutely. I can relate to that on a personal level. And number one, that takes some courage. I mean, I played it on the broadcast, but I mean, she had already done a public podcast with talking about those issues. And that can be just painful in and of itself to talk about those experiences and being hurt. I, too, had white friends, quote unquote, when I was more confused about racism. And the exact same thing happened when you start wanting to talk about racism. They are gone with the wind, as they say. And I've talked to a number of other victims of racism where they had the exact same experience. And sometimes these will be white friends that they've had for like 10 years. Like, it's not like they've known them for a month, like they've known them for a long time. Sometimes going all the way back to childhood and bringing up racism, like, oh, this nigger has, you know, gone crazy. I got to let them go. I feel like I missed somebody. Oh, African 1884, our only caller that is not in England, joining us from Austria. African 1884, you with us, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Outstanding. Any opening thoughts you'd like to share?
No, I'm just waiting to get into the Donald Trump situation and Barack Obama.
Outstanding. We will start with you then, because that was certainly one that I had on the agenda. I know the beep, everybody has been talking about the end of President Obama's era and what they think and what about his legacy and has race, or actually they don't use the term racism. What they'll say is race relations. That's the term I've seen most consistently, that have race relations improved or worsened since he's been in office. And he gave his farewell address this week in Chicago, Illinois on Tuesday, where he used the term racism one time. And that was when he was talking about reverse racism, although I think Thomas in New York, he did point out he thought it was important that President Obama said it was hogwash, the notion of post-racial, but I was not particularly impressed with that either. African 1884, your thoughts as we are days away from the end of President Obama's time in the White House?
Yes, I got to see his farewell speech, I think I got to see today, didn't expect much. But one thing I'd like to point out is that I'm in contact with a sister. She's on Facebook. I think she's based in the space called America. And she posted a video, and she documented a number of killings of African males in America since the election of Donald Trump. And she was stating the fact that we're not seeing all these things now documented as when you compare it to the term when Barack Obama was a president. Because during Barack Obama's term, we would see video recordings and would see the movement like Black Lives Matter coming up and everything. And since Donald Trump's election, things have been kind of quiet and everything. And she was raising this question: is that if all this has just been planned and all that, then how come that right now there's not much news being put out of killings of African males in America, yet it's still happening, you know? So I found that very interesting. So I think, like, when you look at Trump's era, I think there's going to be not much documentation of the killing of African males in America. I think it's going to kind of like slow down. It's going to be hidden. And that's, I think, an attempt or an effort to show that I think white folks maybe, you know, because like with Barack Obama, they had to show us that, okay, you guys got to be in your place. Even if you have a black president, we're going to kill you openly and we're going to document it. And now with Donald Trump, I think they're not going to do that since they already have a white figure representing white supremacy and is a president of America. I don't know what other people's take is on that.
Hmm. That is interesting.
Yeah. Just to add one thing, Gus. The sister had like 20, I think about approximately 24 to 25 cases of African males that have been killed since Donald Trump's election as president. You know, and she put out the cases and the names and everything, and she questioned, how come now we don't see the cameras and the recording and all the reports and all that?
Wow.
Killed by.
Wow. That, I will say, and one of the things that I've maintained for a long time, the vast majority of black people that are killed anywhere in the world under any circumstances by a white person, police officer, another black person, the vast majority of those cases do not get attention. That's something that I've really, and particularly when people get on that, you know, that black people or black males specifically get lots of attention by the police, I've stated that that's just not true. It doesn't matter who you are, if you're a black male, black child, black female, is probably not going to get tons of attention. The cases like Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin, those are not, even with video, those tend to be anomalies in terms of getting all that attention, and everybody knows their name and a hashtag and that sort of thing. Even the last 4 or 5 years, they had, most of the instances where black people have been harmed have not gotten tons of attention. Oh, am I being heard? Just making sure. Am I being heard?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just a lot of, most of the cases of black people being harmed, they don't really get a lot of attention. Even during the Obama era, I think most of those cases didn't get a lot of attention. I'll stop there. Did folks want to respond? Let's see, I'll go down. Anyone have response to that, or you just want to share your own thoughts on the end of the Obama era? Go ahead.
Hi. Can I just add to what's been said?
Absolutely. This is Frank Fanon.
Yes, that's fine, yeah. So, what the brother just said reminded me of something I read the other day on Facebook, where the author was saying that the volume of coverage that we saw in the aftermath of killings of black people in the U.S. that it was deliberate in the sense that it was done in order to make black people, in a way, run, you know, to the hands of white, of the Democratic Party. And now that the Democratic Party basically lost the election, the need for that as kind of, well, that's no longer needed, essentially. So I don't know if that made sense, but basically the coverage was because it was useful for the Democratic Party to get the black vote, and so the more black people that were killed by the so-called right-wing law enforcement, the more likely black people would sort of flock to the caring fold of the Democratic Party. But since the Democratic Party lost the election, I guess that explains the reason, that explains why the volume of coverage of killings of black people has sort of fallen drastically since Donald Trump won the election. So, yeah.
Wow. Hillary Clinton certainly got a lot of mileage from those incidents, getting the family members of different victims of racism, Michael Brown and some Trayvon Martin's mother getting a lot of, particularly getting a lot of the mothers of these victims, yeah. Sandra Bland as well, to come in and support her ultimately failure of a campaign. Other folks have comments on the question that was raised or the theory that was raised by African 1884 or just the end of Obama's era, beginning of Trump's reign?
Oh, yeah, it's June. Yeah, I saw that video as well, actually, with the sister talking about the black men being killed and stuff like that. And, you know, I just think that, you know, the whole thing about Obama's legacy and stuff like that is you know, it was a really interesting exercise just to see how powerful white supremacy is and how much of a pawn he was, in the sense that, you know, this is an ideal opportunity to really abuse black people, put a black person in a quote unquote position of power with no power, and, you know, show loads of, you know, there's loads of black men being killed. And so for us to have somebody in that position not doing anything and black people being killed, and at one point I remember him calling us thugs. It was just complete abuse. And also the whole thing around, you know, I don't know how many videos I saw on Facebook of, you know, the First Lady dancing, and you know, she did the karaoke thing, and, you know, President Obama singing, all that kind of stuff. It just, you know, I know Dr. Welsing talked a lot about this sort of stuff as well, that he, you know, he was just being demeaned, and it was just a complete mockery. And I think that there was just so many different levels of abuse that were used while he was in office. And I found it really difficult. I found it really painful, the whole thing, actually. I found it very painful, the whole thing, because it was hard seeing a black man in office and with all of that going on and him not being allowed to say anything. You know, that's the ultimate in what's in a black body being used for white supremacy. So, it's going to be hard, obviously, when Trump's in there, but I just think that, you know, Obama's legacy for me personally is going to be a painful one, because there's, you know, black people are still being killed in the streets by police and not doing anything. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. And I know there's a few other black people I've spoken to that kind of feel the same. Some, you know, think that the image of, you know, the black family in the White House is significant, but for me, I don't see the point in having that image in the White House if he hasn't done anything, if black people are still being murdered by police and getting away with it, then what's the point? So, yeah, just very, very difficult. But we'll see what happens with Trump, you know. I don't know. We'll just wait and see what happens. But, yeah, that's kind of my take on it.
Sorry, can I just say, just add on to that.
This is Mr. Fox.
Yeah, sorry. Would you say that's the most entertaining that a president and first lady has had to do in public? Because I don't remember any other president or first lady being on so many shows dancing and singing.
Yeah, I thought that. Right.
Bill Clinton? I thought that. What you think, Bill Clinton? He did the saxophone, Arsenio?
That's horrible. He done it once. And right. Well, he might have done it more than once, but when he was in, how much more did he do after that?
I certainly don't remember Hillary Clinton doing all the dancing around that Michelle Obama was required to do. So certainly that's the only one that I can think of that's remotely closest. It seems like I remember Bill Clinton doing a lot of horsing around while he was there. But I don't even know if he compares to what I've seen with President Obama. He was on the Ellen Show dancing and all that. Like, I don't. Yeah. Anybody else got one they can think of, or no? We think. This is pretty easy, no contest.
I think, sorry, Salisa, it's Mary speaking. I think that his whole presidency has just been an act of symbolism, and it's been used as a tool to say, here, we've given you a black president and he's done absolutely nothing for you. And I've never actually heard Obama identify and align himself with black people. He has done something for every other group. He's done things for illegal immigrants. He's done things for Jews, for Japanese, for Chinese, for the gay and lesbian community. But when it comes to us, it's just been complete indifference. And as June has said, just watching us die in the streets and, in fact, blaming us for our own deaths. I mean, the whole incident with Skip Bayless comes to mind, where, you know, the president of the United States is actually having a policeman who has acted in such a way where he should be criminally prosecuted come into the White House and offering him beers. It just made it seem like a child was in the White House. I just think that where black people are concerned, his whole presidency has been a slap in the face, but it's also been a green light for white people not to do anything for black people going forward. And one of the prime examples of that was when Hillary Clinton was campaigning and she got to meet D. Ray Mackeson from Black Lives Matter, and she asked him, what's your agenda? What do you want us to do for you? And he had no agenda. I mean, I know he's not a spokesperson for black people, but they always know who to go to get an answer that is completely inappropriate. And there was no agenda advanced on our behalf. So she and Donald Trump have said, well, Donald Trump more so, there's nothing that's been required. There's nothing that a president that looks like you has done for you. So basically, we don't have to do anything for you. So I just think that his presidency has been an act in elevating white supremacy. It's been an act in normalizing our death and our suffering. And it's basically cemented us as a permanent underclass in the United States and the world over. Those are just my thoughts.
Wow. The BBC, they had an article right at the end of last week, Barack Obama legacy, did he improve U.S. race relations? See what I said? They don't say racism, they'll say race relations, and that standard doesn't matter which text you look at or article or reporting you look at. But the sentence that they have kind of closer to the end of it, it says, as Obama's presidency went on, it became more emphatically black. Or as his presidency went on, however, it became more emphatically black. He spoke out more passionately and more intimately, telling reporters that his son would have looked like Trayvon Martin, the unarmed high school student shot dead in Florida by a neighborhood watch coordinator, was a departure. Now, that's from 2012. I remember that. But that is decidedly not my assessment, that whatever that means, that he did not become more emphatically black. I think Gwen Ifill in The Breakthrough, she has a similar phrase. I have no idea what that means, and there's nothing that I can think of that I would attach to President Obama over the last 8 years, really, where I would say, oh, yeah, that was a moment where he was emphatically black, whatever that means.
That's an example of yellow journalism, if I've ever heard one.
Meaning?
It's complete lies and fabrications. Mm. It's just absolute nonsense, and it's used as a tool to advance a quite obvious agenda right there. That's just the yellow journalism. Just lie, and because I'm white and I say so, that's just it.
Mm. They have that line in between a photo of President Obama sitting on the bus where Rosa Parks was able to finally sit in the front, and then a photo of Trayvon Martin underneath it. That's the images talking about symbolism.
Sorry about that.
Let's see, did we miss anyone on this one? I think we got June. Andrew, did you comment on Obama's legacy?
Hi, everyone. Yeah, there's a couple of things, really. I suppose it's a funny one because I remember, I think I've said this before, but when Barack Obama became president, I was teaching music. I had a load of young people running around, literally running around the whole school, going totally bananas, celebrating him coming into power. And I said, when they ran into my room, I said to them, if loads and loads of black men are out of prison during his presidency and by the end, if black women stop having their breasts chopped off as a first point of a point of medicine in dealing with breast cancer and get the type of treatment white women get, then I'll be happy. And they had a guy at me, they called me negative and all the rest of it, and other black teachers in there, well, one in particular called me negative and shouldn't I celebrate and blah blah blah. And I said, I'll celebrate at the end if those things happen. And I don't know if that's happened or not. There's one thing I would say, though. A friend of mine who used to teach at Columbus, is it Columbus University? She doesn't work there no more. But she said to me about a year ago, she went in for quite a serious operation. And she said to me, if it wasn't for, do you call it Obamacare or Medicare? If it wasn't for what he put in, then she wouldn't have got that operation. Right. And I don't know if I'd be talking to her, well, after I do this radio show. So there is that. So I'm grateful to have my friend in Columbus, basically. For me, I think with Obama coming in and going out, and with this man, this megalomaniac, this egomaniac coming into power, I think that was always going to happen. If it wasn't going to be Trump, it was going to be some other sort of racist coming into power. You see, I see it as a natural progression of where this is all going, because the trajectory of where this is all going is non-white people beginning to ask for a little bit more of the pie. In other words, what I mean by that is just beginning to ask for more, basically just to exist as human beings on Earth, just to say, I'm human and I live on Earth and I should have, and I demand my space as much as any white person. And what white people are basically saying is, we don't want to give you that space. And that tug of war is happening, it's happening worldwide. And it's going to keep happening until white culture changes, or until we say, this is the line, and if you step over it, then there's going to be a problem, And that's the non-white people saying that at the moment. Non-white people have been backing off and giving space to white people, right? And so with white people in America saying, we want a racist in power, we want America back, blah blah blah. That is part of that tug of war. That's all it is, and it's a worldwide tug of war. And so, I do see, this is just one step in it. Someone like him was always going to get voted into America. That was always going to happen after a black man and a black woman being in power, and all that sort of symbolism. And it is just symbolism for the most part, but it is part of that tug of war. I think the question for non-white people, whether we when we begin to come into an understanding of what white supremacy is, and the whole thing about counter-racism, it is the whole idea about not giving any more ground to white people, not giving any more ground. As much as what we can help, it is not giving any more ground to white racists and claiming that space, slowly but surely taking that space back, because that's what that, for me anyway, the whole point about counter-racism is to be taking space from white people. If we're not doing that, then what are we doing? So it's about claiming, taking that space through counter-racism, taking that space back, basically, slowly but surely. But that's going to be met with all kinds of racist practice from white people, and so with them voting him in, that's all it is to me. What happened, and obviously with all the nonsense that's going to happen with that racist in power, right, is everything that we can imagine. But I think it'd be interesting to begin to look through his presidency and then beyond it, in terms of our planning and in terms of what we want to happen through his presidency and beyond his presidency, you know, because he won't be in power forever. And what after, what's going to happen after that? And I think that's, it'd be interesting to have conversations about what's going to happen through his presidency and then beyond it, and how we want the world to be. No, not how white people want the world to be, but begin to think about how we want it to be, because that's partly what counts, how we want it to be. You know what I mean? So that's what I've been thinking about. That's all I've been thinking about when I've been listening to this egomaniac, you know, with his thin skin that anybody can basically, you can go on the Twitter, write something on his Twitter page, and you might even get an answer back with him having a go at you. Which is, anyway, you know, that's partly what I've been thinking about.
Textbook narcissism. Dr. Welsing wrote about that extensively in the ISIS papers in connection with white supremacy. This is Context of White Supremacy. Certainly, folks that are in the U.S. always welcome to chime in, and I would say take advantage. You have an opportunity. We have lots of people, about a half dozen folks from different spots on the globe. If you want to ask a question, get their commentary on something related to racism, white supremacy, take advantage. The number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Our goal for this year, hopefully, we will have regular participation, not just from the UK, but regular participation from some of our listeners on the continent as well. Then we'll have an even broader international perspective for the Sunday Global Talk program. See if we can get that done in 2017. One of our normal participants in this broadcast, Lorraine, she's been with us bunches of times. She was not able to get with us. She had last minute change up with her work situation, so she wasn't able to join us, but she had been preparing all week, and I'd been talking to her, and she messaged me on a regular basis. But she was paying attention to the quote unquote hate crime video that happened in Chicago, where they had the black teens and they accused them, charged them with a hate crime of torturing this white person, suspected racist. And she was saying, well, I'll just read what she says. So she says, I just heard about the four young black teens and the white male. You could clearly see they were off their heads with drugs. Shouldn't people be thinking about what's put in drugs that would make you do such a thing? And to make it worse, put it on YouTube. Coincidentally, I had a conversation with a man that could pass for white this week. There were some riots in one of the prisons in Birmingham, UK, right at the end of December. I mentioned it. You can read about it online extensively. And he said it all kicked off a few hours after he was released. He said all the white inmates were walking around like zombies. They were clearly off their heads, direct quote. I asked him what they were taking. He said some drugs. I can't remember, as I've never heard of them, but I do remember monkey dust. He said he knew something was going to kick off for sure. I asked if black and Asian people use these drugs. He said no, because they mess with your head permanently. So white people are outraged about the incident stated above in Chicago. They've even gone so far to say, we've had enough. I wish they would quantify enough for us so we will know when we get there. That is from Lorraine, but I thought that was interesting on both accounts, the drug aspect, because I haven't really heard too many people say that. I haven't heard anyone try and make excuses for these victims. Say, oh, they were under the influence, and, you know, maybe they need to be treated, or maybe they have a substance abuse issue. And what exactly what she said, what is this drug that would cause people to behave in such a way? And the prison riots, as I said, that happened, I can post some links on that in Birmingham. They just tried to say it was inadequate staffing, that this had been an issue for a while, and they just didn't have proper resources to keep the prison safe. Before I get to our callers, did anybody want to respond to either aspect, either the points that she raised about the Chicago hate crime incident that got a lot of attention, and or the Birmingham prison riot? I know we have a lot of you all that are in the UK.
Can I just say that?
This is Mary.
Yeah, sorry. The Chicago incident is not a hate crime. It looks to me like the usual fooling around of teenage people as what white people do to black children. I mean, you can rape a truly disabled person, a black person, call them every racial slur under the sun, sing KKK anthems at them, and the prosecutor will just say, oh, well, that's just boys being boys. Like, there wasn't a sexual aspect, there wasn't a racial aspect, but someone gets their clothes razored up and it's a hate crime. I mean, I've seen some fairly accurate analysis online about this from Professor Black Truth, someone that I watch on YouTube, and also Jason Black, and it raises some very important questions that no one's asking, and raising some particularly important points to do with that matter. And it would seem that all of the parties knew each other, but what was said to those young people to make them act that way? Because it would appear that something was said by the alleged victim, and there was a reaction to that by these black children. And they are children. They're not adults. Like, you know, white people say that a 20-year-old is a young person or a teen, and it's clearly an adult committing an offence. But when it comes to our children, they're not children. I'll just say that they're young children. And there's clearly something that has gone on. I mean, if a mentally disabled person, let alone a white mentally disabled person, goes missing for a couple of days, there's going to be alerts out everywhere to try and find them. Like, there's something a bit fishy about this whole thing. And the other thing as well is the amount of money that has been raised from this campaign for this young man. So there's capitalizing off black suffering there as well. And what is that money for? What's it going to be used for? They said that this kid had to go to the hospital for what? What? There's just no information about anything going on. There's not even anything said about any potential motive for any hate crime. I mean, saying the word white is not a hate crime, saying Donald Trump is not a hate crime, and they haven't yet indicated anything that would suggest that he was, you know, in quotation marks, kidnapped because of the color of his skin. I mean, I just find the whole thing completely preposterous, but it also, more importantly, opens the gateway for them to just criminalize anything that a black person does. If you break wind and it falls downwind in the wrong neighborhood, you get charged with an act of terrorism for dirty bombing. I mean, it's completely ridiculous to me. Those are just my thoughts on it.
Any of our other participants have commentary?
Gus, can I make a quick comment on that one, please?
This is Andrew. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, there's just a massive double standard regarding that, what happened with them four young people and that disabled young person. Just a massive, it's obvious, it really, isn't it? What they done was terrible. Sorry, I'm not going to defend it. What they done was awful, terrible, nasty, despicable. And if my son done that, right, he wouldn't be able to come onto my house, because just wouldn't happen, right? End of, right? But here's the double standard, right? I watched a video on Facebook of some policeman leaning into a car window and shooting a man with his four-year-old daughter in the back, right? And with his girlfriend filming it, live streaming it on Facebook, right? You know, and this happens up and down. It happens all over the world with white men in uniform, really the KKK. In this country, a list was released about the BNP supporters a few years ago, right? It was released onto the web. BNP supporters, right? And a list of them, their membership. And these people, these men and women were policemen. They held office in the UK, right? And I know for a fact that the same difference is in America, whereby you've got the KKK and they're in the police force. They're all over the place, right? And these men and women are given jobs in white countries. And all they do is run around killing black people, right? So if you know, so at the end of the day, if they can talk about four kids, right, and what they did despicably to some disabled little kid, right, I have no problem with that. I have a problem with it if they don't round up all of them racists that are going around killing black people, right, shooting black people, and they don't put them in prison, right? So as far as I'm concerned, right, if you're not going to do that, I'm not interested. I don't want no one to come and tell me about four young men and women are doing whatever to some little white kid. If you're not going to go and throw white men in prison that are shooting black people, I'm not interested. You know, that's the real conversation, right? It's not about it's not about whether or not what they did was bad or good. It was terrible, right? But if you're going to shoot, if I'm in my car with my girlfriend and some copper basically leans in, shoots me dead, and my girlfriend's streaming it on Facebook, right? What's that all about? And that happens all the time, right? Not just a one-off, happens all the time. So how can anyone come and tell me about what four kids are doing? Remember, you know, police should be held to a higher standard, right? And the fact that they can get off in the state basically just is okay with that, right? That's just a joke. So as far as I'm concerned, all bets are off. You know what I mean? What I mean by that is that, you know, don't tell me about anything any young black person's doing, because at least they're young. What excuse does an adult have? None. And to me, that's it. That's the conversation.
Anyone else have commentary on the quote unquote or alleged hate crime incident that took place in Chicago?
Hi, yeah, it's June. Yeah, just echoing what the others have said about it, really. And I too saw a comparison on Facebook with two, you know, there was a similar incident with, where it was reversed, where there was white people that had abused this black disabled guy, and they got away with it. So, you know, it is a complete double standard, and this is what we keep seeing over and over and over again. And I hear that there's a petition going around now that the four black children that did this, now they've got some petition going around to have them, you know, the death penalty and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's echoed because of the Dylan Roof thing. I think they're trying to stir that up now, because Dylan Roof is gonna obviously get the death penalty. So it's a complete double standard. You know, white supremacy is gonna do whatever it needs to do, whether it's rational or not. They're gonna do whatever they have to do to maintain that system. And they don't care whether it's fair or just, or they don't care. They're just gonna do whatever they have to do. And if they're gonna criminalize our children, and you know, white supremacy is about lies. It is about lies. Yeah, they're not gonna. That's what it's built on. It's built on that mistrust. You know, rape, murder. We all know this, and it's so painful just seeing it play out over and over and over again. And I just think, you know, it's important for us to be able to understand this stuff for what it is. I don't get into discussions with white people about any of this stuff, because, you know, I'm very clear about my boundaries around that sort of stuff, because they're just not going to get it. They're just not going to understand it. And they see what they want to see. They see what they want to see, because it suits them. It suits them, and it's gonna trigger them more, seeing a white disabled person getting abused by other black children, than the other way around. They're gonna get triggered by the white disabled person, because that's where their interests are. White supremacy's interest is to maintain and prevent white genetic annihilation. That is the core goal. So all of the other stuff, all the other madness that happens. Once you understand that fundamental truth underneath white supremacy, it's easy to understand why they behave the way they behave. They're just, like you said, it's narcissistic, you know, it's their own narcissistic stuff playing itself out. They don't care about anything else. There's no empathy, there's no justice, there's nothing. It's just, we want to prevent white genetic annihilation, and we will do whatever it takes to make sure that happens. And that's the crux of it. That's the crux of it. You know? That's my take on it.
Context of white supremacy. Anybody else have comments they want to get in before we get our callers?
Hello?
assume folks are good, at least for the moment. Let's see, retired firefighter, did you have a question or a comment for any of our international listeners, callers, participants?
Greetings, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just like the idea of hearing the word global context of racism, white supremacy, and see it in its working. Because that right there is a example of what all of us are attempting to do to move this in the constructive forward way, which is to eventually, as soon as possible, come up with an answer to neutralizing this global system of racism, white supremacy, and replacing it with a system of justice. It's gratifying beyond all words, actually. That's why I'm kind of like just kind of like tripping over myself in words, but it's great to be able to correspond, use this technology to correspond in this way. And it's definite based on logic, definitely is going to head towards solving the problem, replacing it with something better. And the best thing I could think of is a global system of justice, which guarantees that people are no longer being mistreated. And it guarantees that people who need the most help get the most constructive help. And so it's going to be the most popular part of your different segments in your whole program itself. It's probably going to end up being the most significant one eventually, as soon as more and more people start tuning in to it, which I think that's going to happen. And that's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Right on. Hopefully that will be the case. Very important. Racism is a global problem. Thomas in New York, did you have a question, comment for our international participants? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Gus. Good afternoon or good evening to the callers, international callers, firefighter. I did have a couple of, I had one question. But I just want to say, according to the definition of a hate crime, what those kids did was definitely a hate crime. Although I don't find them holding white to that same standard. I remember I reported earlier this year on one of the shows, there was a bus burned outside of a Jewish synagogue in Brooklyn. And they caught some black teenagers who burnt the bus, but being that they burnt it in front of the synagogue, they charged them with a hate crime for doing it. And a few years back, there was a white, so-called Italian white man who beat down a black guy and called him nigger while he was doing it. And therefore, they charged him with a hate crime, but he was able to fight that, you know, put out his playlist of all his music and how many songs use the word nigger. See, he was just singing a song. He wasn't, you know, saying it in a negative way, and it ended up sending that hate crime. So I find that I would, if we did a survey, I would guarantee you most of the hate crimes in America, they're charging black people for, or more so than white. I'm almost sure if we were to do that, that's what it would look like. I think that, I don't think Trump has, I think the guy said he had, what, weak skin or thin skin, Gus?
Thin skin.
Thin skin. I'm not sure about that. You know, I think that what he's using is a tactic. I said it on the show once before that Trump is the first hip-hop president, in my opinion. He's been rapped about more than anybody, any other white person ever. I mean, if you think they were up to almost 260-something songs, and this was just like in the 90s, I think what he's using is a tactic used by hip-hop artists, that as soon as someone goes at you, you go right back at them. You don't give it a chance to make yourself look weak. It's definitely narcissistic, but I don't think it's thin skin. I think it's a tactic. I'm not going to let no one say nothing about me without me addressing it. And after a while, no one's going to say anything about you because they know that there's going to be a counter. And I think that's what he's doing. And my question to the British listeners is, how is the Revolutionary War taught in British history classes in school? The American versus British Revolutionary War. I just want to know, how is it told from a British perspective in school? And I'll mute my line.
Revolutionary War. Sorry, this is Mr. Fox. The Revolutionary War, the American War of Independence, I really cannot remember studying that in either primary school or secondary school. I think that is one which gets swept underneath the rug. I think you might learn that if you go to university, or you might see it on the History Channel. But when I was at school, and this is secondary school now, probably about 20 years ago, 18 years ago, the War of Independence wasn't really told. I think that's one the British Empire don't like to really talk about. You only really talk about the wins, or some losses, which they like to turn into wins, i.e. Dunkirk. They've got a new film about that coming out. But the Revolutionary War, no, that's an L that the British don't really like to talk about.
Hi, this is Frank here. I've actually got a history degree from a UK university, and that was never taught to us. It wasn't even on any of the courses that was available to be selected. They would talk about the Second World War, the Cold War. I mean, the only bit of America that I remember doing, the only bit of history that pertains to America that I remember doing was during my A-levels, and that was to do with the Civil Rights era. But the American Civil War the American War of Independence against the British was never on the list at any sort of level, just like the honorific Fox has just said. But yeah, at university level, I didn't see any mention of that. So, yeah.
The same here. It was more World War One, World War Two, with a particular emphasis on Hitler, and things to do with Russia and Stalin, Lenin. Not really much of anything to do with American history, to be honest with you. It's kind of like, well, that's an American thing, but we've got so much history here to do with the monarchy, etc., that we don't really have a scholastic focus on what happened in America.
Right on.
Hi, it's Junior. Same for me. It was just the only thing I remember learning about American history was civil rights. That was it. You know, Dr. Martin Luther King, that's it. I don't remember any other history, American history, that was taught. So they very clear about what they want and what they don't want. And just echoing what the previous caller was saying, it was just all monarchy stuff, you know, royal family, British history, all that kind of stuff. Very clear about what they want to teach. Yeah.
Girls, could I add
Can I be heard?
I heard two. I think I'll get you, Mr. Fox. Andrew, were you going to answer the question, and then we'll get Mr. Fox?
Yeah, very, very briefly. Last year at my school, I remember them. I know that the school decided to celebrate the 4th of July. My American history isn't brilliant. So the 4th of July, is that the celebration that the white Americans had over their cousins, the white English? Is that what the 4th of July is all about?
Being independent from their cousins.
Yeah, the 4th of July is the United States defeating Britain and getting that.
Right, okay. Right. Well, in my school, I know that they had a big to-do about that last year. You know, when I say big to-do, is that, you know, they served, you know, what the kitchen, school kitchen decided was American food or something like that. And then they did something around 4th of July. I can't remember doing, I know we did the First and Second World War at school, because I remember, because I literally still got my old school books. I'm 48, but I still got them books here. I still got all my old history books as well, right? So I'm going to go and have a look now. When I get a minute, I'm going to go and have a look, because I can't remember doing the War of Independence either or any of that stuff. Because come to think of it, we did the whole thing about no tax without representation. I remember doing that. I can't remember the detail, but I remember doing that. And I remember doing, because I actually remember writing it. And I remember we did the reasons for that, the why that came about. I can't remember the detail, but I do actually remember writing something around that, because I really liked history in school. I failed it at GCSE, though. I failed it when I went to do, we do something called GCSEs, which is like, before you go to high school, we do something called GCSEs. We used to do something called O levels. But, you know, even though I like history, I totally failed all of my exams at school. Probably why I teach art now. But I mean, I remember doing something around what I've just said. So I'm going to go and check it out now. But I remember doing that bit. So I remember doing something about that. It was brief, but I remember writing something around it.
Mr. Fox?
No, that wasn't me. That was a caller in Austria.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. African 1884.
Yes. I just want to add something to that in regard to the caller's question. I know it was addressed to the brothers and sisters in the UK, but if I recall correctly, in the history class here, while I was in high school, it was mainly anything in regard to do with America focused on the civil rights movement, and that was just about it. So most of the history focused mainly on the First World War and very, very much on the Second World War, since this is Hitler's birthplace. So the Second World War is very, very much taught in high school or in history classes. But the American Civil War, not very much. Never had anything about that.
Very interesting. The caller at 2456, did you have a comment or questions?
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, I just wanted to say a little bit about the four people that jumped on the mentally retarded person. I want to say, first of all, we need to forgive them. We need to just go ahead and forgive them. That was a very non-thought-out thing that they did. That is not how you handle whatever he said, because the reports that I was getting, and I could be wrong, was that he said something. I don't know if he called him a nigga, or he said, you know, Trump is my hero or whatever. That's not how you handle it. But I'm in the forgiveness mode when it comes to off top. And I also want to say, with President Obama going out and then Donald Trump coming in, and we just finished Gwen Ifill's book. If there's anybody on the line that haven't read that book, you should read that book and then just think about what's going on right now while you're reading that book. And last thing I want to address is there was a program recently that had two young ladies on there, on the cows, that have white parents. They're black women with white parents. And they have, but you were talking about, you all were talking about white mothers. And it would be interesting if we can get some people on the show that have one white parent, but their white parent is a father, is the dad. That would be interesting to hear. But that was a great show. And I want to thank the Global Cows listeners for us being able to hear from you. It's encouraging that we get people from around the world participating in cows, and I think we could work together to get something done. And if we have any French callers on the line, I want you to tell me, are there any updates on the French soldiers that went to Africa and raped a whole lot of Africans, if you have any updates. And thanks again for coming on, and thanks for letting me say something.
No French callers with us today, unfortunately, for the future. And we have had people on the program who, non-white people, who have one white father. Dorothy Roberts, that would be one. I've talked about her work consistently, which is phenomenal. All of her books, she's been on the program three different times, but she does have a white father. And we talked about that the second time she was on the program. In addition to others, we've had other folks who also have a white father and a non-white mother.
Wow, hold on, sorry. You're saying Dorothy Roberts has a white father?
Yeah, we talked about it, the program Shattered Bonds, 2010. I think that was the first thing we talked about before we even got to the book, because she wrote an article where she talked about it. I think she was talking about, because she's written about what they call transracial adoption, white people abducting black children, and she, you know, conceded. She felt like it would have been hypocritical for her to not acknowledge, oh yes, and by the way, I do have a white parent. But yeah, she talked about it second time she was a guest.
I've not listened to the actual broadcast of that. I've not uploaded the videos, the broadcast onto YouTube, but I've seen a picture and I wouldn't have thought that. But she's kind of, if I can remember, I think you have that British actress, I think her name's Sophie Okwudu or something along them lines. She has a Nigerian father and a white mother, but you wouldn't notice it by looking at her. But
I got disconnected, but that got corrected pretty quickly. I thought I had unmuted myself and announced. So I got disconnected. Unfortunately, I had to hang up everybody, so I'm having to call everybody back. And since there's so many people, it's taking me a minute to get all of the numbers entered. But I have one more, and okay, all right, dialing everybody back. I don't know if you'll hear the ring, but okay, there we go. And Mr. Fox was speaking when we got disconnected. He was gonna respond. Let's see.
Hello.
Okay, sorry about that. I got disconnected from the program line, so I had to call back in. I had to call everybody back after I got disconnected.
I'm back.
Beautiful.
We've all had a conversation, so I think if you're ringing them, they've got an answer. I don't know if they're all getting the phone calls though from you.
We should have Mary back. We have you back. I think we have Frank Fanon back.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh, I think we got Andrew. I think I'm just missing one. Let me get, while I'm getting the other person back, I think, Mr. Fox, you were responding. I guess, number one, the surprise about Dorothy Roberts having a white parent, which she did talk about on the program. Surprise about that. And then, did you have something else you were going to add as well?
Yeah, surprise about that. I'm looking at her pictures now, and now I've seen a couple other pictures. I can kind of see it. Yeah, because when I'm doing the videos now, I've got to walk with a notepad. But what the previous caller said regarding the non-white people with the white fathers, I remember a person ringing in. Is it called Klondike Mike? You rang in on the 19th of November,
right?
The comp show. Was he a regular caller?
Oh yeah, he's been on for years.
And I remember you laughing when he came on and you gave him the cowbell. So I was thinking you might have had previous run-ins with him.
Oh, yeah, it's constructive, but just he's called in for a number of years. He's another one that has a white father that he's talked about over the years that he's called in and said sometimes he gets frustrated or doesn't agree with what we're talking about. So he leaves it alone for a while and then he'll come back realizing that white supremacy is a problem.
Yeah, it's a big difference. I think there's a difference when you have a white father compared to a mother.
Sorry, Gus.
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I think, I don't know if the rest of the people are added from the UK. So I think it's just you and, is that Mr. Fox, I think? But the rest, I think, were dropped.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're still here. Okay.
And Frank Bernard is here. I think it's just Andrew and June that I'm struggling to add back, but I'm working on it aggressively. But everybody else we do have.
Okay, sorry.
No worries. Yes, Was that? Did you finish your point, Mr. Fox?
I can't remember what I was going to. I think I was saying there's a difference between when you have a non-white person who has a white mother compared to a white father. Because I've noticed that, especially with Asians, you get the white person who will the white male who will have a child with an Asian female, and the offspring when it's a male really wants to be considered as white. And we've got examples with that with. Daniel Holtzclaw and the other guy who done the mass shooting in
Elliot Rodger.
Yes. You do see a difference. It's a frustration that the non-white child with the Asian mother and the white father, they want to be like their father, and they don't like being ridiculed for being half Asian. They kind of look down on the Asian side, but they really you know, they really see eye to eye with white supremacy. They want to be a part of that. And you see with the so-called Latinos, the mestizos, what they're called as well, you can see it with them. So that is it's a big difference when you have a white father in the mix compared to the white mother. Even though they both practice racism, but the offspring, especially when they're male and they come from either the Asian and the, you know, and the white, is a big difference.
I know. Dr. Welsing, we spent a lot of time breaking down Elliot Rodger and why he conducted that shooting. I think that was back in 2014, if memory is correct. You can go back and listen to us. We think we spent a big chunk of the episode. And I wrote about that as well. I thought that was a really important case. He did have a white father and a non-white mother. And he talked specifically in his manifesto about his frustrations about not being accepted as white. The caller at zero, and we have everybody back now, thankfully. The caller at 0990. I think this is our caller who had commentary specifically for Miss June Allen, so we'll be good to get her on. Kendra, you should be with us.
Yes, Gus. Thank you very much. Hello to everyone on the line. Hello to the international caller. This is Kendra. I would just like to share an incident with June Allen, which Gus talked about. Since it involved me wearing a sweater from her clothing line. So the sweater in question was inscribed with hashtag Mindful Yardie on it. So I decided to wear it that specific day because the weather was cold in Atlanta, which is where I was visiting my mom for the holidays. A friend of mine, who I hadn't seen in a while since he moved from Florida to Georgia, asked me out to dinner with himself and two of his friends. I didn't realize until getting to the restaurant the two friends in question were white women. Well, one of the white women honed in on the sweater, and she started questioning me on the meaning of Mindful Yardie. I was already uncomfortable with the whole situation, so I told her I didn't know what it represented, that it was a gift, thinking that she would just end the question and, you know, just move on. But instead, she dug into her purse, and she pulled out her phone. And she started Googling. I didn't know what she was doing. But a few minutes later, she said to me, I found it. It's a woman named June Allen. She teaches about racial wellness. And then she continued to read. So after she was done reading, she asked me if I sure I didn't know about June Allen. I thought that was kind of strange that she continued to press me about whether or not I knew June Allen or not. So I just could not believe it was so important to this woman that she went through a good portion of the dinner, you know, trying to figure out a stain on a sweater. A few days later, my friend called me telling me that the white woman in question told him to tell me she was impressed with the work of Miss Allen. I guess when she went home, she must have conducted further research. I also learned that she is a psychologist, so that was also very interesting. I also received a lot of positive feedback from a lot of non-white people when I was wearing the sweater. One that really, really stood out was a non-white male. He clearly has a white parent, you can tell. But he said that he comes from a Jamaican lineage. So he knew what the terminology yardie was, and he told me he liked this sweater, and you know, he said that he would look it up and purchase it. But I was really impressed with how people were so drawn into the sweater and asking me questions, specifically the non-white people, and it's just something that I wanted to share with Ms. Allen.
Wow, thank you. That was thank you so much for sharing that. I really, really appreciate it. It's interesting because when I first decided to, you know, take that term, I mean, the term yardie, my parents are Jamaican for a start off. And, you know, the term yardie had, when I was growing up, it had kind of like a negative connotation to it. You know, yardies were always supposed to be kind of like the black gang leaders and stuff like that. But when I started doing my own research and started looking, you know, how where it came from and stuff in Jamaica, it was more about, you know, black guys that liked being at home. They were kind of like the homebodies, the guys that were, you know, that kind of lived a more of a natural life and all of that kind of stuff. It was like, you know, yard is your home in Jamaica, and that's slang for home. And so I wanted to take that and flip it and make it something positive again. I'm a mindful yardie. My heritage is Jamaican, and you know, my work is about being mindful about racism and being mindful about being a black woman. And so to use that, that's where the hashtag came from. That's why I started calling myself that. And it's just so great that, you know, because you've got the shirt, that it turned into such a, you know, another sort of conversation. It's interesting that the white woman, you know, she was like a dog with a bone to find out what a yardie meant. And but yeah, you know, I'm glad that she had an experience that, you know, became something positive. So thank you so much for sharing that. And you know, I'd love you to send me a picture of you in the shirt, if you can do that. If you can email me at info@yardofgreatness.com, or if you can send Gus your details, and you know, somehow, you know, so I can get hold of them. I'd love to see a picture of you in the shirt. I'd love that. Yeah, but thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. It's fantastic to hear. Really great. Thank you.
I actually have a picture with myself wearing that specific night. A waiter actually took a picture of me, my friend, and the two white women with me with the sweater on. So I can send it to Gus. I'll actually send it to him as soon as we get off the line, because I have it in my phone, and I'll forward it over to him, and he can kind of share it with you. But yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. That's awesome. I'll look forward to seeing that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Kendra. I know she was so excited. She had emailed me earlier. She was like, is June going to be on the program this weekend? I have such a great story to share with her. I was like, I think so. I did mess up and missed that thing with Dr. Welsing, the program we were supposed to work on. But I think she's still going to hang out with us this weekend. Wait a minute. I think, we did. Wait a minute. Is this, did we miss anybody? Did somebody else dial in who had a question, or is this just Thomas in New York? Okay.
Maybe. Just me. I had it on, got dropped, so I called back in.
Okay. No, that's not an issue.
But Gus, if I can say, I find it extremely interesting that all of the European callers said that they learned about civil rights and their schools over there, which I would love to see how it's laid out in their books as compared to ours. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I would suspect it probably looks similar to ours in terms of you're not going to see Robert F. Williams, Negroes with guns. You're not going to see names like that. It'll just be no. Dr. King and I Have a Dream. And it was great.
Yeah.
But that, yep.
A pretty thin sliced version of everything about the width of a cheese triangle. Just nothing there.
Take your beatings with dignity, Negro. That's what it's about.
That's about go ahead.
Interject. Yeah, this is Frank. During my A level history classes, we were taught by this white Marxist teacher. So he actually made it, and it was a mostly black school. So he made sure he told us the way, like that. Basically, in the UK, they would just focus on Dr. King and all that non-violent stuff, but he was making it his duty to go beyond that with us in the classroom. So I guess I was sort of lucky in that sense that I was able to get a more in-depth sort of look into like Malcolm X and Kwame Ture from him, because I did some civil rights at university, some civil rights, a module on civil rights at university, and our professor never really touched up on that. However, at sixth form, which is the level before university, my history teacher made sure, because he was like a radical Marxist, and yeah, I've got my issues with Marxists. However, he was very clear that he wouldn't just teach us about the stuff that was on the national curriculum, and he was going to go a bit beyond that. But he also cautioned that when we were writing the exams that we should be a bit mindful of how we answer the questions. But that's what I wanted to contribute.
Sorry, Frank.
Yeah, hi.
This teacher, this Marxist teacher, his surname was Smith by any chance, was it?
No, his surname was Holbro, I think. Yeah. Mark Holbro, okay. I think is his name, yeah.
I think I had a teacher like that. You've got a couple of communist Marxist teachers who push the boat out a bit and try and be different. But they're all the same still.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to make mention of that because I mean, my sister, she also took some history modules when she was at sixth form, and I would kind of just, I would ask her questions about what she was doing in class, and she would give me the usual Dr. King, I Have a Dream spew. So I kind of knew that my own history teacher was sort of going beyond, above and beyond what he should have done. Yeah.
Do you know if this, Frank, do you know if this professor, if he was married to a non-white person or any details? Just curious.
Oh, that's that's interesting. I actually, he never really talked about his private life. So I don't have any recollection of whether or not I don't have any information about whether he was married, but I wouldn't be surprised if he had been. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
You can put it up. They normally bring it up if they are. They know the teachers who have a non-white or a non-white partner, they will actually bring it up, especially if it's in a school which is predominantly with black children. Like this as a way to try and kind of, I'm on your side, I know what you're going through.
You
will actually know. So if the fact that you didn't know or he didn't say anything, she was white and was probably a communist as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense completely.
And this is our normal program. We would go to the 3-hour mark, but this is supposed to be a shorter, just doing 90 minutes, so we are getting to the close. But I did want to ask that there have been so many movies over the past month that have come out with predominantly black casts here in the U.S. They had Fences with Denzel Washington and Viola Davis. They had Hidden Figures with Taraji P. Henson and Octavia Spencer and Janelle Monáe and even The Queen of Katawa. I hope I'm saying it correctly. I don't know if that at least to me, has not got as much attention, but Lupita Nyong'o is in it, and David Oyelowo. It's set in the continent And these, the group of black children and a black female specifically, a black girl, young black girl, she becomes just a brilliant chess player, master chess player. And it follows this group of young children as they learn to play chess. And I was watching it. It's I'm not done. I'm only about halfway through. It is mildly constructive. I mean, you know, anything that is produced under conditions of racism, white supremacy, the white supremacy is going to be there. But I was mildly surprised, especially because I hadn't really heard anything about this film. And like Lupita Nyong'o is, you know, pretty big star, like for her to be in a new movie, and David Oyelowo, for them to both be in a new film and for it to get no attention, or at least I didn't hear anything about it. I was a little surprised. But did you all, have you all seen any of these projects, any of them?
Gus, could I say something?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to say, like, oh, this is African 1884 from Austria. You mentioned Queen of Katwe. It's based on a true story. And I think the setting, but the setting is Uganda. I come from the concept called Uganda, but I reside in Austria, Vienna. And I haven't watched it yet, but I think you know, the reviews are good in regard to that. But I'm looking forward to watch it. Other than that, the Hidden Figures, the American Embassy in Vienna is going to have a free viewing of Hidden Figures, I think, next week. So I'm going to go make an effort to go see that.
Maybe if you write a paragraph or what have you, you can share. Let us know what you think after you check it out.
Hidden Figures or Queen of Katwe?
Both.
Oh, okay. I'll do that.
Awesome. Andrew, were you going to comment as well?
Yeah, I was just going to say that in London, anyway, it was on limited release. So I kept trying to go and see it, but it was on really strange times. Like, I mean, it was on during the daytime, or like one show in here, one show in there. And I don't even think it's in the cinema over at all now in London, anyway. But I really wanted, I read about it before it came out. I really wanted to go and see it. So it's interesting listening to what you say about it. You know, I mean, there's been a few limited release things that black, you know, about black people, or, you know, starring black people. I mean, one of them was a story about Barack Obama and his wife. I cannot remember the name of the film, but that
Southside.
Was on limited.
Southside with you.
There you go. Did you get a chance to see it?
Are you talking about the Netflix film?
No, this is a film that was in the cinema, but it's in some very limited release, you know.
Okay,
so, I don't know if it's
a film.
I don't know if anyone's seen it.
I have not seen Southside, but I was aware of that film that got more attention. I think that was released like maybe in the summer or early autumn when that came out, but I haven't seen Southside.
I tell you what, there was also another Barack Obama film called Barry. Is it called Barry? I think it's called Barry.
Yeah, Barry.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone's, I just saw that last week. I just saw it on the, I got this app called Playbox. You can watch movies for free.
Yeah, so, same.
I didn't know what the film was. I just clicked on it, and it's just a black guy on there. So I just thought I'd just watch it. And it just happened to be that. You know, it's a funny film. It's got his character just sort of stumbling around in the whole film, just wondering where he fits in. you know, that's basically what the film is. And they got him dating some white girl in New York in the early 80s. You know, the best thing about that film, it's got Fab Five Freddy in it. There's a lot of graffiti in it. A lot of graffiti art, and there's a little bit of break dancing in it. It's meant to be New York. It's meant to be New York in the I don't know, about 81 or something like that. So the best thing about it is Fab Five Freddy, you know, and they do capture. You know, I've never been to New York. I've just watched Beat Street and Wild Star and a lot of hip hop movies from that time period, and it's got Fab Five Freddy, and it reminds me of that. So no, I don't know who made it. So it's a bit of a strange movie to be. It's like having early Barack Obama in Beat Street. That's what I don't know. Like all of those films mixed up with him in it. It's a strange film, anyway.
Gus?
Yes, ma'am.
The one that I've seen them raving a lot about, for obvious reasons, is Moonlight.
Oh, yeah. Do you have any comments on Moonlight?
A financial flop in comparison to Birth of a Nation, but they're putting everything behind this particular film, and I was really surprised. Well, not too surprised when I saw the BBC like showed excerpts of it on Breakfast News and on BBC News 24. They're really pushing that particular film. You know, lots of deprivation and lots of gender issues, so not surprising. But that's the one that stood out, and obviously you've heard of Hidden Figures, but I hadn't heard of the one with Lupita in. That one I hadn't heard of before.
There's another one as well. Sorry to cut in. The Girl with All the Gifts. I think you might have seen the trailer, Gus.
Yeah, I did see the trailer. We talked. Yes, indeed.
Yep. I'm watching it at the moment on one of the free sites because I've got an Android box. I suggest everyone purchase an Android box. Basically, you can watch anything on really on TV on your Android box for free, especially all the movies as well, HD. So that's what I'm actually watching at the moment. But it's only to be expected. You have a young black girl in this called Melanie, who is supposed to have all the gifts in this zombie apocalypse kind of film. And she's a zombie herself, mind. So only to be expected. But I'm about one third away for it, but nothing in that film surprises me from everything we've actually seen regarding zombie flicks and black people. So.
Wow. I've seen the three that I mentioned. I've seen Hidden Figures. I've seen Fences. I've seen half of Queen of Katwe. I think I'm mispronouncing it, but I've seen half of that. So I can't really say a whole lot on that, other than I did not recognize Lupita Nyong'o at all. Like, I think I watched the first 20 minutes, like, dang, I thought they said Lupita Nyong'o was in the film. There's a really pretty girl. Oh, that's her. Got it. Because she's not really the feature. She's just kind of in and out. She's not the main character in the film, so you can kind of miss her. But Hidden Figures and Fences. Fences was painful to watch. It was painful enough that by the time I got to the end, I had kind of reaffirmed my stance that I'm not watching any more films that have predominantly black casts, because it's just going to be filled with anti-blackness and black misery and suffering, and I don't really want to. I could just stick with Black Mirror and miss all that. Hidden Figures was not quite as depressing, even though by the time I got to the end, I felt like I had just watched The Help all over again. It came out in 2011. Some of the same people from The Help are in Hidden Figures. Octavia Spencer, for one, she got an Academy Award for The Help, but it felt strangely like the same thing, that you have racist white people and black people have to slave and work, literally slave and work for them for nothing. And you do all this work and do all this work and do all this work, and maybe there will be one good white person who is not racist, who will come in and fight off all the racists and make your life a whole lot better, and you'll be endeared to that one white person. Actually, that part was really nauseating, because the good white person in Hidden Figures is Kevin Costner. So to have to sit through the film with Whitney Houston, Bodyguard, to have to sit through that, and then his performance at her funeral, and then this, man, it's not good, but it was not. I did not have the same feeling of despair and disgust after I finished Fences as I did with Hidden Figures. But it is pretty much like watching The Help. That was my impression, and I can't really comment on Queen of Katwe because I have not seen the whole thing yet. Any final comment? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, has anyone seen Sweet? It's an old film from 71, I think. Sweet Back's Badass Song. Has anybody ever seen that?
I have. Melvin Van Peebles, Mario Van Peebles.
That's
father.
Right. Yes, that's right. And you know, there's a. It's funny watching that film. It's poor quality. It's poorly made, but you know, it's a very interesting film that is on a lot of levels. You know, I mean, it would take a lot. I know there's no time now, but it'd be interesting to pick that film apart. There's a lot going on there in terms of the lead character waking up to the reality of his surroundings. He starts off one place with one mentality. It's one of the only films that I've ever seen whereby a black character beats up two white policemen unapologetically, beats them up, takes their handcuffs, beats them up, goes on the run. Yes. But then he has this conversation with these voices, I've got the book and there's a DVD in it, and it talks about them as being sort of angel characters, if you like. And the conversation that he has with them over the course of the film is really, it's the story of one of the lead characters, a black man, waking up to the reality of his surroundings, effectively waking up to white supremacy. That's it's an interesting film, actually. The film got no support whatsoever from the studio system in America. And, it's a really interesting film to read about in terms of the making of it, in terms of the support it got, which was zero, and then what the studio, and then the response from the American studio system in terms of the nonsense that they put out after it, all that blaxploitation nonsense, that his film was not that, do you know what I mean? And it really is just quite interesting. It'd be good to see black people have that kind of courage to make that kind of those kind of films,
I was going to say, couldn't let that pet. The Spook Who Sat by the Door does show black people actually killing white soldiers, not just enforcement officers, but National Guardsmen. It's in the film and the book, but that would be another one. Mm. But I agree. And with Melvin Van Peebles' project, Sweet Sweetback, there's a documentary about how he made that film and all of the trouble that they encountered and trying to get financing. And just, of course, it's going to be tons of obstacles, but it's a documentary where he goes into all that. And his son, Mario Van Peebles, who did Posse and Panther and New Jack City and a lot of other films as well, he did Badass, which is it's a docudrama, but I mean, it's a movie about his dad making Sweetback. And it goes into a lot of the details as well. But I saw that also. That might be interesting to check out. And there's one more thing I was going to say about Melvin. The film that he did before Sweetback, Watermelon Man, is very interesting and also all about racism. It follows a racist who turns, but he's doing all this suntanning and everything, and he turns black mystically, and just shows how everyone responds to the neighbors, his white wife, his family, after he turned, his people that he works with. It's really, really interesting film that he did before Sweetback. But yeah, Melvin Van Peebles has a pretty substantial body of work, films that deal directly with racism.
Watermelon, definitely. I like Watermelon, man.
It's definitely worth a watch. Maybe two. Yeah. it's great. It came out in the middle of the, I think, mid-1960s, I think, after Sidney Poitier's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. That might be a cowbell, too. Any final comment before we conclude?
Check your email, Gus. I sent you an email earlier. Just check your email when you get a chance. But apart from that, I'm good.
Outstanding. Mr. Fox, outstanding contributions. The YouTube channel, tons of folks have said that has been so, so helpful for them to be able to access some of the archives and older episodes and just being able to go and access it on YouTube. Always appreciate the support and all of our other participants for sharing the content, bringing new listeners. Thank you, Frank Fanon, first time participating. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Sunday evening. We thoroughly enjoyed having you, and hopefully you'll be with us next month, Frank Fanon.
Thank you. I mean, I am at the start of the program. I'm a bit nervous because I listen to your, the archives of your shows a lot. I do a lot of running. And instead of listening to music, during my runs, I listen to the Kyle's radio show. So, I feel a bit, I feel honored to be able to share this platform with you and the rest of the guys on the program right now. So thanks for the invite, Mr. Honorary Fox. And yeah, thanks a lot. I'll be here next month.
Outstanding. Really appreciate you sharing your views, and that is great, prioritizing listening to counter-racist information over entertainment. That is outstanding. The June Allen, her website, theblacksteps.com, theblacksteps.com. Outstanding information, and I already passed the image along. Thank you for sharing some of your time with us as well, June.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been an honor being here, and just I absolutely love the fact that we're able to do this on a global level. And the technology is just awesome that we're able to come together, share thoughts, strategies, share our challenges, our pain, and I just absolutely love this platform. So Gus, I salute your consistency, your tenacity and your passion around this work, because if it wasn't for you doing this, then we wouldn't be here having this conversation. So I'm so grateful to be part of this movement, and I'm so committed to my part in contributing whatever I can to the cause. And so yeah, it's just really great to hear everyone today, and I've got a lot out of hearing everyone's opinions and stuff. It's been great, so thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I learned a lot as well. Mary, thank you for dropping in, sharing your views. Always love having you on the program as well. Hopefully you can come back and speak with us next month also.
Yeah, thank you. That would be great. The only thing I'd say to everyone, as I always say, is just stay safe.
Absolutely. African 1884 in Austria, a few folks not in England, thank you for sharing. If you write up anything after you check out the films, Hidden Figures, Queen of Katwe, definitely if you write something up, we'll share, or you can deliver in person when we do it next month, if you can join us for February.
Yes, I'll do that. And I just want to thank all the participants from the UK and from the United States of America. I appreciate it. I'll be there next presentation. I'll be here. And I just want to put out something. Maybe it's not... like surprising news for everyone, but the controversial victim of racism, white supremacy, Bishop Eddie Long, has passed away and everything. So said he died of an aggressive form of cancer, something like that.
I had not heard that. Wow. I will have to check once we get off the program. Wow. I remember there was a infamous song after some of the news came out about his alleged misconduct. Back in 2000, I think that was 2010, Aisha Sekhmet did a whole song about him, but you have to go back and check. Oh, wow, we just had someone who wrote me who is living in Belgium, who is a Cows listener. So we'll be adding spots of the world next month, hopefully, to get greater participation. Thanks to everyone who listened. Thanks to all the folks who called in, asked questions. Appreciate you taking some of your time to listen. Appreciate the podcast. Hopefully got some constructive information about what racism, white supremacy is, how it works, what it means to be classified as white, and some constructive counter-racist strategies, things that we can be doing to neutralize this system. I think, as Andrew said, take our space back under the system of white supremacy to challenge racist activity and to let them know that this is not going to continue unabated. Non-white people, victims of racism, we're going to have to change our behavior, because whites, they are dedicated to terrorizing black people on into infinity. With that, we should be here tomorrow. We have a black female. She's in North Carolina. She was being terrorized at her residence. And a big part of it, we called Mr. Fuller to kind of get some of his suggestions, if he had anything to offer. And one of the things that he said was that it just from what he's been hearing, talking to people, it seems like there's just more and more incidents where whites, they are trying to do things to get us upset so we'll lose our cool and start yelling or maybe even get aggressive because we're being mistreated. And then they can say, you're yelling and you're being uncouth. And then they can call enforcement officials or do whatever they want to just further abuse and terrorize us. He was saying that, and she said she felt like that was exactly what was happening, that racists, they were trying to provoke her. They were trying to get her to get angry so that she could flip out, and then bang, they could do whatever they wanted and have just say, hey, she was in here acting crazy. She cursed at us. She was being all aggressive and just another angry black woman. And I was afraid for my life. Same thing we've heard with Darren Wilson and so many other times. But that'll be tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Monday evening. And then Pam will be back with us on Wednesday. She's one of our favorite guests, the author of Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation, The Interracial Con Game, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. She'll be here on Wednesday, normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll get some of her thoughts on the end of 2016, the beginning of the reign of Donald J. Trump, the end of the Obama era, and just other thoughts pertaining to racism. But always love having Pam on the program this Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. With that, we will call it a broadcast. Thanks for everyone participating. And please have a constructive, safe Sunday. Say consistently, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I've seen no evidence that being under the influence of alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, any other substance, monkey dust, I've seen no evidence that that's going to help us solve the greatest problem in the known universe. We need to have our brain computers operating at optimal efficiency to crank out solutions to the problem, white people, and I don't think being under the influence will help with that. That in, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.